It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee. This is the Autosport Podcast. Formula One was back after its summer break. What do you mean, no break? Well, Max Verstappen smashed his Ferrari rival Charles Leclerc's qualifying practice run by 0.9 seconds, almost, to top free practice two ahead of the Belgian Grand Prix. He had the comfortable upper hand ahead of the first round after the summer break, as he was the only driver to break into the 1 minute 45s in the lap times. Verstappen came to the fore in the middle section of second part of qualifying, a second part of practice when they do the quali sims. And on the podcast today is Autosport.com's editor Hayden Cobb to talk to us about practice today and a few other bits and bobs that have been happening in Formula One. There's just been a little bit of news flying around this week. We were saying before we started recording, it's been the summer break, but neither of us booked holiday. So it still feels like, oh, okay, business as normal then, except Formula One's on, which is a good thing.
Yeah, what break? Who needs a break now? I've been looking forward to this. These are the days we live for. So yeah, it's been an exciting few days in fairness, and nice to have a fun cars on track again.
You were back on Autosport Live this morning, well, this afternoon actually, with the live text. A quick few thoughts on free practice one, seeing the cars back on track, and of course we do get the list as well. The teams have to supply the list of updates, so it was our first chance to get a bit of a look on some of the teams that have bought bigger packages, some haven't as well. But your thoughts on when we saw the cars roll out just after lunchtime today?
Yeah, incredibly busy day, as is normally the case, particularly with the just after the summer break. Lots of teams rolling out upgrades. Mercedes tried out a new floor on Russell's car. McLaren have got a few raft of upgrades in there, here and there. And everyone's got sort of the less draggy rear wings to try to find that compromise of the high speeds of Spa, but also with the twisty sections, which is a good sort of challenge that Spa provides, a bit of both. But yeah, incredibly busy on track, even with a red flag that was triggered by Kevin Magnussen stopping with an electrical issue midway through FP1, which the team sorted for the second session, so he's all okay. But yes, it was a day basically with a big asterisk next to it, because as you said at the top of the show there, that Verstappen led the times, but he, as well as Leclerc and a couple of others, have got grid penalties for this weekend, and they'll be starting at the back, although there's so many of them that whoever starts at the front of the back will actually be about midfield. So,
The front of the back. I'm going to use that on the Sunday podcast when I'm back on. So Charles Leclerc, we found out before free practice one, was going to start from the back of the grid after Ferrari opting to take a new power unit for the weekend. Whereas Red Bull, when I think we asked Max yesterday, maybe it was, about the possibilities, they were a bit more vague. And even at the start of FP1, they were still not letting on how much they were going to change. But now we know they'll both be at the back of the grid at a race where overtaking is possible and very possible. And so it's going to be fascinating to watch our two title protagonists going head to head right at the back. Who can fight their way forward the quickest? Will they follow each other through the pack? That's another question as well. Who'll get ahead? Are you looking forward to Sunday?
I am, yeah, definitely. And I think that's an unusual factor, but it does, when it does seem to come up, it creates a very unique and an intriguing element to it. As you say, yeah, but it looks like on the practice times that Verstappen and Leclerc look to be the fastest two so far this weekend. Our colleague Matt Kew is currently literally crunching the numbers as we speak in terms of the Friday practice runs. So they will be the ones to watch from their starting positions further back. But of course, you've got already confirmed for back of the grid penalties along with those two will be Lando Norris, Esteban Ocon, Valtteri Bottas, and Mick Schumacher, who at the moment, if it looks like it'll be back of the grid, he's not going to take the full whack, but it will probably be subject to if he qualifies high enough to be a bit further ahead, if that makes sense. So I think he's got currently 10 places due, but obviously on that maths, he needs to be inside the top 10 to negate that. So if he isn't, they'll just take the full whack and then he'll join that grouping at the back. So six drivers, your back three rows will be all grid penalty decided. So it's gonna be worth a watch on Sunday, whatever happens.
And the order of the starting grid is going to be an interesting one to try and work out, because as you say, it depends on how qualifying goes tomorrow. I wonder how quickly the TV coverage after Q3 tomorrow that we'll actually get. We should get it pretty quickly. We should get like the final starting order. They should. It's a technological enough sport to crunch the numbers quickly, right?
Oh, immediately. The rule change has slightly changed for in recent times, that it will be if you've got the same number of grid drop number, like penalty grid drop slots, if that makes sense at all. If you take a full bit and say it's 20, and then your rival also has 20. Basically, whoever sets the fastest time in qualifying between you two starts ahead. Now, obviously, that gets a bit complicated if, say, five of these drivers all have the same amount of grid penalties, but then it's pretty much like a mini qualifying within their own qualifying. They all know they're going to the back, but if Verstappen can put a time that's quicker than the others that have grid penalties, his equal amount of grid penalties, then he starts ahead of them. But obviously, if someone like Schumacher has fewer, he starts ahead of all of them. It will be fine. We'll figure out very quickly. I'm sure by the chaps on the Saturday podcast, they will know immediately and we'll be absolutely fine. But it's going to be a shaken up grid regardless of the outcome of qualifying. So yeah, one to look forward to.
Final FP2 results. Max Verstappen, as I mentioned, 8.5 tenths, almost 9 tenths ahead of Charles Leclerc's Ferrari. Lando Norris in third. Why was Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin up in fourth? Was that new parts? Was it glory run? What's that all about?
To be honest, it's probably a combination of a few. He was likely to be running a little bit lighter on fuel. They have got a few new parts as well that Stroll has been using and Vettel hasn't got for this weekend. So they could be doing the business. And others will probably be running their own programs, which sort of in general skews the Friday look of it. It wasn't a traditional Friday run. There was rain as well that curtailed a fair few of the runs in both sessions, to be fair. So it's not to knock Lance Stroll's position as the fourth fastest car there. And as you say, like if if that stays the case, he will be on pole position because the three ahead of him all have grid penalties. Yeah. So it seems unlikely at this stage, but it looks like the Aston Martin has improved as a package for this weekend.
Sebastian Vettel, 15th, though, about 2.5 seconds down in fifth. Carlos Sainz in the second Ferrari. In sixth, Lewis Hamilton in the first of the Mercedes, 1.3 seconds down on Max's time. And then Fernando Alonso splitting the difference between the two Mercs. So Lewis, Fernando, then George Russell in eighth. What do you make of the upgrades that Mercedes have brought to this race?
Looking like they're getting there or thereabouts. They obviously have a wonderful opportunity, as we mentioned, about these grid penalties in terms of potentially even getting that first win of the season because Verstappen and Leclerc are coming from the back, which naturally will put them higher. And if they qualify roughly where they've been in recent races, they'll be on the sort of the front row, front two rows, and with that opportunity ahead of them. The car looks strong. The upgrades appear to be working. Again, it's very, very early days to sort of make a fair judgment on that, but you would say they should be happy with it. Speaking immediately after the Friday practice, both were quietly confident, but Hamilton did sort of again give a bit of a bluffing, saying he thought the Mercedes were still a long way off in terms of the outright pace of your Verstappen's and Leclerc's that we saw today. But the thing with this car that's been mentioned many times on this podcast and cut through is it's a tricky one to get a handle on. But if Mercedes sort of knuckle it down and get it into a window where they want it, like we saw at Hungary in particular, it can be very, very quick and compete against the Red Bulls and Ferrari. So I'd say that they are, due to a number of factors, well in the fight there. If things go their way, get a bit of luck, who knows? That could definitely get a first win of the season. But like I say, they need a few things to go their way in the fight at the front. And it's very hard to predict that right now.
Autosport's F1 reporter Luke Smith on the Sunday Night Podcasts throughout the year, whenever I've asked him, has said this year Mercedes will get a win. And just before the summer break, I checked in with him again on the Sunday podcast and said, "You're still sticking by that?" I think maybe it was in the halftime podcast we put out this week. He went, "Yep, sticking by it." He said they're going to win. That Mercedes will win one, at least one this year. So, and you know, he's convinced of it. Lewis Hamilton did say earlier in the weekend that he feels like he's got his race car back. And then he sort of dialed back the enthusiasm a little bit. Oh, they're all poker players, really, aren't they? Daniel yeah. Ricciardo in ninth. Sergio Perez, Checo down in 10th in the Red Bull. But hey, it's practice still. First of the Williams with Alex Albon in 11th. And Zhou Guan Yu in the Alpha in 12th. So we've mentioned a few names there that sort of spin off into other various little subplots and sub-stories. First of all, we'll talk about Charles Leclerc and Max and the title battle. We had a story on autosport.com this week where Charles Leclerc was saying that closing the gap is going to be, you know, very difficult. Not impossible, he was saying, but what's Leclerc this week been saying about that title battle?
He knows it's a long shot. He doesn't want to give it up. He feels like he's done a bit of a mental reset over the summer break, which I think he needed particularly after that mistake in France when he was leading and crashed. But he knows that the only way to get back properly in the title fight is he needs Verstappen to basically mess up a couple of races, probably ideally for his championship hopes, and he then needs to be pretty much perfect from here on out. 80 points over 9 races, you don't need to do the maths to know that is a considerable gap on average that he needs to close. I mean, mathematically, Verstappen can finish second in every race for the rest of this year and Leclerc win, and he still wins the title. So, yeah, it's a big ask. They're not giving up on it. Of course, they'll be still at this stage of the year. But, yeah, it's still going to be very, very tough for him to get that title fight up and running. Sort of to any point of a competition, it feels a bit of a stretch at the moment.
Now, we mentioned Aston Martin and Alpine and Fernando Alonso. And in the press conference where we get to ask the drivers questions, the media stuff will move back to Thursday, by the way, in case listeners are interested in the sort of behind the scenes workings of an F1 weekend. And they compressed it all very much into Friday morning. And I think the feedback from it was to try and save workload on teams and things like that. But in effect, people were still turning up at the circuit on Thursday. The workload was the same. The drivers would tell us something on a Friday morning, and before we'd had a chance to write about it, or you know, you could follow that on your social media accounts, or you know, whatever, just fans of Formula One, then they would you know, they'd get in the car and then do something else, and you think, well, there's very little point interviewing them on Friday morning. So a lot of stuff on Thursday, and obviously a lot of interest around Fernando Alonso. Lots of questions about how the move to Aston came about, what happened in the background. If our listeners haven't quite been following autosport.com as closely as normal over the last couple of days, what's Fernando been saying about his move?
So, yeah, he gave his side of the story, as it were, because it did create a bit of drama, a bit of spice that few days straight after the Hungarian Grand Prix when his move to Aston was announced. He admitted, or sort of made the revelation that, yeah, he told basically the people he felt needed to know at Alpine in terms of Luca Di Meo and the bosses at Alpine, as well as his engineers and generally his team. But interestingly, he sort of did outline, so he said he didn't tell Otmar Szafnauer, who was the caught in the middle guy in this situation, because he was the one that admitted that he only found out basically that Alonso was leaving through Aston Martin's own press release, which is not a way you want to find out that you've lost a driver at all. So yeah, he gave it that and was saying, giving a bit of detail to his reasoning behind it that we hadn't heard before, which was basically he didn't feel probably wanted or as much love from Alpine as he was wanting, and Aston Martin were giving it, or said to give it in abundance. There had been obviously a long time that the contract talks had been dragged out, really, between him and Alpine over the last few months. He was ready to sign and ready to keep with the team for long term and wanted a long term deal. But Alpine dragged their feet a bit. We're only offering him a year by year deal, partly due to his age, which Aston Martin felt was not a concern to them. And I think that's the crux of it. It was so probably probably offered a considerable amount of money to make the Aston Martin switch. Saw the project is growing, they're developing the team, developing the infrastructure, there's a lot going on there, and it was an opportunity that obviously opened up because Sebastian Vettel has decided to retire from Formula One at the end of this season. So things aligned for Alonso to go, can I join your team? And Aston Martin were like, please join our team, and there you go. They did it very, very quickly and sort of gave Alpine no chance to move, but mostly because they'd already had a fair few weeks and months to sign up Alonso if they were desperate for him. The complicated, obviously, bit that adds into this, which are separate but connected elements to it, is the Oscar Piastri conundrum.
Of course.
Whereby Alpine, as their return or response to Alonso leaving, was like, right, we're going to promote Oscar Piastri to the race seat alongside Esteban Ocon at the team for next season. He's their contracted driver. He had the option on them. Their original plan was to keep Alonso and put Piastri at Williams. But that clearly didn't sit well with Piastri and his management team led by Mark Webber. And so they sort of had a conversation with McLaren, who have earlier this week officially announced they will part ways with Daniel Ricciardo at the end of the year. So that opens up a spot there. And right now, we're not sure who Oscar Piastri is driving for next year. It will either be Alpine or McLaren, but it's at present going to the F1 Contracts Recognition Board, which has been a thing for a while and come up a few times, but we've not really seen it in the F1 spotlight for a while because this situation hasn't come up. Normally, contracts are very well looked after and smart, but it's basically I've said this, no, from Alpine's point of view, and McLaren have said no, but we've got this in place, and it's up to an independent board to go look at the fine details, look at what contracts have been signed, what information is in place, and go, this is the right one, this is the correct one, this is the legal one. It's difficult to know which way it will go. The hearing, we believe, is early next week, potentially Monday, so therefore we probably will get an answer one way or another very, very soon after this weekend. But at the moment it's difficult to edge your bets. If I was a betting man and looking at body language and what's been said in the media by both sides, it feels like McLaren potentially does have the case for Oscar Piastri and has that situation in it. But that's purely on, like I said, body language comments. There is no insight I can give beyond that. But yes, it'll be one that will be decided soon. And then that's the next step of the driver market to sort out, where Piastri goes. And then indeed, which, whether it's McLaren or Alpine, how do they fill their hole that is vacated by one Australian or the other, whether it's Pim Ricciardo or Piastri.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
It'll need filling by one team.
Yeah, there's so many talking points in here that I find really fascinating. The whole deal with Alonso was done over the course of a weekend, and there were no talks at all before Vettel announced his retirement, and that the team would happily have kept Vettel for another year, and it was his decision to leave. And it was only once he did that it started off the chain of events. So it's amazing how quickly it can happen, I guess, when you've got someone like Alonso who knows his mind and knows what to do, and you've got someone like Lawrence Stroll who is clearly very successful in business and owns the team and can make that decision incredibly quickly. Also, I thought what was very interesting, I pointed this out to the guys on the half-term podcast, looking at the winners and losers of F1 so far, was that the last time there was a big contract dispute that went to the recognition board was Jenson Button back in 2004 with BAR and Williams. And at that time, BAR won their fight with Williams for Jenson Button to drive with them for the following season when he went to the CRB. And who was obviously... David Richards was head of BAR, but who was, I think head of Honda Motorsport or something like that, winning that dispute? A certain gentleman called Otmar. So he is...
He's been here before.
No stranger to the workings of Formula One. Let me get your opinion on this, because it is just an opinion, and I think it's interesting because our listeners will have an opinion, and it's good to get your opinion as well. Alex Kalanorkis, our Grand Prix editor, thinks that if Alpine lose Alonso and lose Piastri in the stroke of one weekend, that there needs to be some form of, or not fall guy, but almost some sort of management change there to recognise, look, this has been a really serious failing in the team. Do you think it requires that level of, you know, someone's head on the chopping block? What do you think? Because it is like losing two drivers is, well, unfortunate at best.
It is a fair point, and that is normally what happens in these situations. If somebody really messes up like this in a big way, because they would have known contracts and dates and clauses that would have come up, and they would have been obviously kept private, but they would have known them and should know them off by heart in terms of timings. But if someone's let that slide and the sort of contract clause in Piastri's expired, and then the next day he basically jumped ship to McLaren at the same time that Alonso jumped ship and went to Aston Martin, that's a pretty big error to make without any sort of comeuppance. But obviously how that shakes out and who the blame goes on is who's looking after these negotiations now.
Oh, you're sitting on the fence now, aren't you?
But I am. But the problem is, Alonso said... So basically, the fall guy would appear to be Otmar Szafnauer. But Alonso, at least taking him at his word, said that he wasn't part of these negotiations. So...
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Therefore, you wouldn't think it would be Otmar.
Now, I think his job title at Alpine is team principal. A quick plug for one of our other podcasts, the GP Racing podcast. It's called Flat Chat, and it's with GP Racing. That's our monthly magazine, our monthly glossy magazine, by the way. Excellent subscription. Highly recommend it. Stuart Codling, our editor of that magazine, Codders, along with Matt Kew and Mark Gallagher, on this month's edition, and you can find it on your podcast player, just search Flat Chat. Mark Gallagher, who's been around Formula One for a long, long time, made a note on that show pre-Alonso's interview about who he told and when he told, about how the role of team principal isn't what it was. And he looks at the longest-standing heads of Formula One teams and looks at people like Christian Horner, but also Toto Wolff, who chooses to not sit on the pit wall but sit in the garage. But also Toto is different. He is a shareholder in the team, whereas, okay, Christian Horner, we don't think is a shareholder in Red Bull Racing, but has been there so long, he's got autonomy to do what he's bought them huge success. He's earned that autonomy. But that role of team principal, the traditional role of the person that will know everything, do every, the very top of the pyramid. It's all sort of shaking out in Formula One a little bit differently in this modern era of, CEOs and heads of this department. And the actual role team principal is a bit diminished in some teams. And again, I find that an interesting subplot that perhaps he wasn't, that the team principal of Alpine perhaps wasn't doing the negotiations with the drivers of Alpine. But anyway, I'm sure all will out in the fullness of time. And then, we'll talk about Daniel Ricciardo, I'm sure, more when we find out where he'll be driving, if at all, next season, and how the Oscar Piastri thing falls in. But just from our coverage over the last couple of days with Daniel Ricciardo back in the paddock and talking to the journalists, how's he been and what's Danny Ric been saying?
Naturally, I think he's taken a hit on his pride. He was desperate to make this McLaren move work, basically because he put a fair bit of his reputation on the line when he typically jumped ship from Alpine, when it was then known as Renault, to join McLaren, seeing as the progress and development was there. And, well, whilst the progress has been there or thereabouts, he has really struggled. And they, by the sense, from what both sides are saying, they've basically tried everything. They turned the car upside down. They've tried everything they possibly could to find that sweet spot for him, and it just hasn't happened. Not to mention the team have been courting and keeping an eye on many young, exciting talents coming through. Not just Oscar Piastri. You only need to sort of look to their IndyCar outlets and to see what they've been up to there with people like Alex Palou and Pato O'Ward. They're testing plenty of young drivers, so the pressure was on. And yeah, I think, like I say, hit it to his pride, but he's sort of swallowed up and gone, right, I'll gleefully take the 20+ million payoff deal that comes with it for leaving his contract early as a mutual agreement. And he said he has naturally had quite a few chats with other teams that still need to sort out their driver lines for 2023. He's absolutely adamant that he wants to stay in F1, and if it's not F1, it could be a sabbatical year. We know sort of the dangers or the opportunities that can come with that in itself. But one of the options, as we sort of tie it all up, is indeed potentially Alpine if they do lose Piastri. And he sort of said it's an option that he's considering if the team, if it will work for both of them, basically. Mm. If both are happy, that's that a bit of bad blood that when he left, not too bad, but I mean, it's ironically, talking about team principal and that, the former team principal, Cyril Boutable, said that he thought and he'd hoped that Ricciardo would live to regret his move away from the team. And, maybe he will, but Cyril's not even there anymore.
So exactly.
Fresh starts could be there. There's other teams that he could also move to. The Alfa Romeo team are yet to get onto them in a sec, but yet to sort of finalize their driver lineup for next year. The same can be said for Haas, the same can be said for Williams, as well as Alpine, as we mentioned. So that there are opportunities there, and let's not forget, he is a 8-time Grand Prix winner. He took on 4-time world champion Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull in a fair fight and won it in that sort of his, I guess you could say, glory period at currently. So he has the talent. He has the ability. I think he needs a bit of love, needs a bit of self-confidence restalling. And And wherever he can find that, that's what he's probably going to look for, because it's probably not going to come down to money for him at the moment. He wants a bit of confidence, wants to say, look, I'm still the driver that I was. I want to prove myself. And wherever that may be is going to be found out soon.
It's funny you mention a sabbatical, actually. I hadn't really thought about the connection with Kimi Raikkonen, who, of course, was paid by Ferrari. Obviously, his year out in 2010, but I'd kind of forgotten. You think, oh, yeah, Kimi had his year out in 2010 and came back to Lotus and was still really sharp. But then he had a contract with Ferrari for that 2010 season. And so, he had a very nice year sitting there on Ferrari money. But what was that, 12 years ago? And Kimi's probably about, 41, 42 now? So,
it's similar sort of situation, James, you could say.
31-ish, I mean, sort of 30-ish years old. So you can take time out and come back.
Yeah, that's exactly. It will be interesting. And obviously, Lotus at the time, and this proves how much team names don't really mean a lot sometimes, that's Team Enstone. That is, yes, Alpine as present. So, yeah, you could easily see history repeating itself in that Raikkonen situation. But, yeah, it will be interesting to see what he weighs up and how it goes. Obviously, the first bit of the sequence that we're waiting to get sorted is where Piastri ends up. Because then that will take either open up an option or deny Ricciardo one, and go from there, really.
On the TV coverage, Gunter Steiner was dropping into the Sky Sports F1 coverage, and they went straight in. Very heavy tackle, both feet, I thought. They said, Gunter, welcome to the show. Have you signed Daniel Ricciardo? First question. But hey, why not? Because you know that if you put that to Gunter, he would appreciate a straight question, give you a straight answer. And he said, at least on the TV coverage, no, we haven't signed Daniel Ricciardo. And he said, but we have a seat next year. That's not a secret. We haven't decided yet our second seat in the Haas team. And also, he said, look, give the guy the weekend, but I'd happily speak to him next week. So I think it's a very straight answer. So what do you think, Ricciardo to Haas? How would that look for you?
It certainly is an opportunity. Haas have through a little bit of their own work, but through a little bit of just circumstances around them, become into a very sort of strong situation. Obviously, they've had a decent recovery, got a decent car. They brought Kevin Magnussen in when they had to get rid of Nikita Mazepin. And yes, now they find themselves of, we've got Mick Schumacher, we've got the tyres, but they've got the call on that seat. They're adamant that it's not Ferrari influence, therefore it doesn't definitely have to be Schumacher or Ferrari affiliated driver. Ricciardo's obviously just become available. So they have a few options. Steiner, to add into his quotes, like he said, he's adamant he doesn't want it to be a rookie. To be honest, there aren't probably too many options that would fit that for how Haas to look for at present. But that basically rules out one element. And therefore, Ricciardo is an experienced hand. Obviously, he is a former race winner. You'd feel like a Magnussen-Ricciardo combination is a pretty strong lineup. But again, this depends of what they sort of want from Schumacher. Do they see him kicking on, if indeed they can keep him? Or does Schumacher also make a move in this sort of merry-go-round? Because obviously he's got a couple of years now in F1. So decent, grounding, let's say. He's done his sort of rookie operation, and now it's his time to sort of make the step on. Does that happen at Haas? Does he see the move coming? Does another team think, he's our guy? This whole dynamic has opened up massively. That was sort of, you'd said this time last month, which was indeed the Hungarian Grand Prix. So Alonso hadn't even made his bombshell yet. It's all come about very out of the blue. But that's what we love. We love this drama and this. Yeah, it's a bit of soap opera, you could say. It'd be fascinating to see where it goes. And that's just the driver market, not even talking about teams and how they may look different in a few years to come.
Let's get on to that. If only Sebastian Vettel had thought, oh, go on, I'll give it one more year. Next year, we would have probably seen Oscar Piastri alongside Alex Albon in the two Williams, because of the funding at the team and the ownership now. They don't need necessarily the funding from Nicholas Latifi, so he won't be in the car next year. That would have been a great, great driver pairing. I'd have loved to have seen that. But hey-ho.
Big time, yeah.
So just to keep you really busy on the day that Formula One comes back. Audi decided to drop a nice little bombshell on... Well, we kind of knew it was coming, so it's nice to get the confirmation, but it certainly made for a very busy Friday for you and all of our Autosport.com colleagues. So Audi developing a separate Formula One engine themselves away from Porsche, who we believe, not confirmed, but will be buying in 50-50 with Red Bull powertrains. Let's talk Audi for now, though. What's the news about Audi coming to Formula One?
Yeah, so one of the worst-kept secrets in F1, I think, as the cliche goes, along with the Porsche news that is to come at some point soon, is Audi. We're looking at making the break into F1. It's been an interesting dynamic because obviously they're both owned by the VW group, Audi and Porsche. So there's that obvious link of why spread your wares into different baskets. But Audi, in their own right, a massive brand, massive manufacturer, had massive success in other racing series and have the facilities and the infrastructure and the resources to put their own F1 operation together. There was the belief that that would be the sort of second of the big German brands to come in, but they've got their everything together because of the sign off for the 2026 F1 engine rules changing or meeting the requirements of what both needed, and that they will be producing their own power unit from 2026. They haven't officially signed up with a team. They will just be supplying an engine. They will not be sort of creating their own team, as it were. All indications point to being the Sauber operation. To the point, on the same day of this announcement, that Alfa Romeo confirmed that their partnership and their title sponsorship of the Sauber team will finish at the end of 2023. So that basically means Sauber need a partner from 24, ideally, but certainly there's a big one coming in from 26 with an engine. It sort of all suits them quite nicely down to ground. That's where they're looking. So yes, it's a bit Audi coming in with their own engine. It's all very, very exciting. They've weighed up possibilities. Yeah, they've got what they want. They have the lead time now, and they have a little bit of history in terms of the feasibility studies that were done previously, the behind the scenes bench testing of engines of previous generations of Formula One, and these viability studies were in fact led by, who would you guess it, Stefano Domenicali in his previous roles, and now he is F1's head honcho. So it all sort of married conveniently, but to be fair, they've made their own decisions and come to conclusion this is the right time for them to move into Formula One. So yes, it'll be very exciting, and we wait with bated breath of the Sauber announcement, and I guess the details of how that will come out, because as I said earlier, Sauber will now be without a title sponsor and a partnership from 2024. So there's a couple of 2 years gap of how that looks, and do Audi sort of fill the gap but not have their engines in? How does that work with them? Does it basically become a Audi sponsored Sauber team with Ferrari engines? Not sure how that would work out, but the details will be nestled out. Now that's probably why the sort of the delay is. They need to finalise these details to figure out of exactly who's coming in and when and how that all connect together. But yes, incredibly exciting to have Audi in F1. It's what we wanted for a long time. More manufacturers, more competition. Yeah, Toto Wolff's already said he's relishing the competition, but he knows that it's going to become stiffer with the powerhouses of Audi and Porsche joining in the ranks.
And funnily enough, starting in 2026 is the blink of an eye in Formula One terms. Look how early Mercedes started working on the current era regulations. And that led to their domination. But that's how they lured Lewis Hamilton away from McLaren, by showing him how early they'd started and got a head start on everyone. So really, that the next couple of years are going to utterly fly by. Few interesting subplots in this that I thought was interesting. There's a really good interview that Ted Kravitz from Sky did with Christian Horner in his garden over the F1 break, at least. And they go into quite a lot of detail on Red Bull powertrains there. Now, obviously, I'd known that they were growing that and had made some really high-profile hires from particular Mercedes and the high-performance powertrains at Mercedes. But actually, going into a lot of detail there about how they were building an engine business, which I found really insightful. And I think that'll be an easier deal for Porsche to come in, and Red Bull have built a powertrain business, and Porsche can come in and say, right, well, we'll have half of that, or we'll brand it, you know, Porsche Red Bull or Red Bull Porsche, whatever. Really, really impressive for a soft drinks company to build an engine company. Massively impressive, whatever you think of, you know, Red Bull, whether you're a fan or not, or Christian. But I think Audi have a harder job because they want to do it from scratch and, you know, and on their own. So, and also a time when automotive is heading into electrification and even sport. I mean, look at FIA World Rallycross, top series of that is now gone, you know, fully electric, and how, yeah, there's conversations around e-fuels or synthetic fuels, and but really automotive is going electric, and how now is the time, and VW have led that. VW have led that more than Mercedes, more than BMW, as the established OEMs. Certainly way ahead of the likes of you know, Ford's, GM's and Toyota's of the world, and yet it's VW Group that are choosing to invest in what is at the minute a big combustion sport, but Formula One has a lot of soul searching to do in terms of its future and carbon footprints and things like that. So it's going to be interesting how it all plays out. Again, so many subplots that, my goodness me, could make a whole podcast of their own. But let's call it a day now for the Friday pod. Hayden, thank you so much for joining us. What can people look out for over the weekend on autosport.com?
Yes, this weekend, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, Matt Kiew is currently crunching the numbers on the Friday practice to see who is really going to come out on top. I've had a conversation with him whilst he's been working on it. And yes, I think we've got an exciting race coming up where the likes of Verstappen and Leclerc fighting their way from the back of the pack. And how can the front runners sort of escape? Is it a Mercedes win possible? So that's very exciting. We've also got a look at our various Autosport writers, their favourite Belgian Grand Prix from across the years. Obviously, the future of the race is under question at the moment in terms of will it stay on the calendar from next year. But it's a race that is a firm favourite. It's got great history, great sort of culture that's followed it over the years. So one of the oldest races on the calendar as well. So yeah, that'll be an exciting little pick. And oh wow, all your greatest reaction from action and reaction from the paddock at Spa-Francorchamps for this weekend.
We are looking forward to it. I'm off to go pack my bag for the Classic at Silverstone, where I will be tomorrow, so I'll miss a bit of coverage. Yeah, I can't wait. I'll be there with our chief editor, Kevin Turner, making some podcasts about some classic stuff, which will be very, very interesting. But so I'll miss a bit of the live F1 coverage, so I'll be looking forward to barreling home as quick as possible and watching that on catch-up. Make sure that you do join our post-quali podcast. Tomorrow will be Luke Smith and Matt Kiew from the circuit, or on their way, probably on their way home or back at the hotel, I imagine, on the Airbnb. And then our man, our Grand Prix editor, Alex Kalanorkas, on his holidays till Monday. So I think we've got you lacing up your boots and coming off the bench for Sunday, yep. if that's all right.
I'm ready. We've done a pre-game fitness test here. I hope I've passed. And I'll rest up for Sunday. And I'll be all ready.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Before you.
Brilliant. We'll get you in the ice bath. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Most footwear brands overlook natural materials for cheaper synthetic alternatives. But when it comes to quality, Mother Nature knows best. Allbirds took that idea and ran to create their iconic wool runners. Wool runners are made with premium supernatural materials that are both comfy and durable, so you can run to the ends of the earth or just to the store. Plus, they're machine washable to stay looking as fresh as the first day you got them. The Wool Runner Upper is made with super fine ZQ certified merino wool that's breathable, temperature regulating, and moisture wicking. And the sugarcane-based sweet foam midsoles cushion your feet and put a little bounce in every stride with all-day support. Allbirds are constantly innovating to increase the performance and longevity of their materials. Even on your toughest outings, you'll wear out before your shoes do. This year, take a big step forward for Mother Nature with the Allbirds Wool Runner. Discover your perfect pair today at allbirds.com. That's A-L-L-B-I-R-D-S.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.